All right. Good morning, everyone. For those who just walked in, come on, grab a seat. Ready to get started. For those who don't know you, which is, I'm guessing is probably most of you, my name is Nick Randolph. I currently run and own a company called Built to Roam, focusing pretty much entirely around the Windows Phone 7 platform. We do a bit of other stuff as well on the side, but our core focus is around the Windows Phone 7 platform. So this session is the first up, all-up session on Windows Phone. It'll be sort of your roadmap to the other phone sessions. And of course, we'll jump in and actually build an app and hopefully go through the submission process just to give you a bit of a feel for where the platform's at and where we're going with it. So this is the brief agenda. Okay, we're going to start by looking at what other sessions are available. I think there's 12 sessions in total, including this one, around Windows Phone. And they range from everything from connecting to Azure through to the new and upcoming stuff that's coming in Mango. We'll talk about the state of the platform, I guess where the devices are, where the OS is, and where Marketplace is. That's important because that's how you make money out of the apps. We'll talk about Mango, and let's get fruity with it. There's a whole bunch of new tools, a whole bunch of new APIs that we can get started with. And then we'll go through actually building a sample app. Session roadmap. So we're up first on Wednesday morning, as you can see. And then so this afternoon, we've got what's new for Windows Phone alongside a session which is really on cross-platform development around building. In fact, there's two sessions this afternoon on cross-platform development. And those will talk about what you need to be aware of if you're building mobile apps, what you need to consider if you're building iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone 7 apps, and how you can optimize your code or potentially get some reuse out of the code that you write. Okay. Thursday morning, we've got a performance session by Jeff, which is probably going to be one of the best sessions to attend if you're already doing Windows Phone 7 development. He'll really go through how you can optimize your applications so they really perform really well and they're really snappy. Thursday afternoon, there's some really great sessions there. And then again, on Friday, we've got some stuff that's talking about push notifications, which is really one of the keystones about the Phone 7 platform that we'll talk about. There's a whole bunch of great sessions. One thing to point out, though, is if you look at the guide, those two sessions have actually switched. Okay, unfortunately, I had a clash with my flight back to Australia, so my session got moved back to Thursday afternoon, so that's on connecting Windows Phone to Azure, and the session on architecting with Caliburn and Micro got moved to Friday afternoon. So just be aware of that when you look in your program. Those sessions have actually changed. Okay. Let's talk briefly about what the market's saying about Windows Phone. Okay, it is a new platform. Okay, forget the 7 on there. This is not Windows Mobile version 7. It's a version 1 platform. Okay, well, we're approaching version 2. Okay, for those who are keeping track of what's happening around Mango and the new set of APIs, we're really looking at a version 2 product now. Okay, we're starting to reach that point of maturity, and the market acknowledges that. They reckon that the first release of Windows Phone was great. It's a really compelling offer for consumers. Okay. We're still not there yet. Okay, we still don't have really good market traction. Okay, we're still at about something. The statistics range from 0.07 through to 5% of the market share. It depends on which market you're talking about. Okay, but we're still not up at the 30 or 40% where we really need to be. That said, we do have a lot of the major apps. Okay, people go on and on and on about the fact that we don't have 300,000 apps in the App Store. Well, we've got the major ones, and in fact, we've got a ton of apps. Okay, the latest statistics are around 30,000 apps in the App Store. Okay, that's a whole bunch of apps. Okay, and they cover the broad cross range of everything from books through to travel apps. Okay, there's a big range, and of course, gaming is a major component of that as well. In fact, one of the things that the phone platform does really well is that with the integration into Xbox, we've got a whole bunch of Xbox Live games that have come through Microsoft itself. That connect through to your Xbox Live profile, and so that your game tag comes through to that, so that you can reuse your avatar and your points and things like that. Okay, so it really becomes a compelling gaming platform that taps into the Xbox and the desktop gaming platform that Microsoft offers. Okay, some statistics. Now, unfortunately, these statistics are very geared towards the US because, okay, most of the market research comes out of the US. But it's interesting to note that we do have a good awareness of the platform. It is growing. Okay, people are actually aware that Microsoft does have a phone platform now. Back in Windows Mobile days, we really didn't have, like, if you go out and talk to the consumer on the street, they'd go, Microsoft doesn't have a mobile platform. Okay, there was a time when things like the Dopod came into fruition. But people didn't really associate those with Microsoft. They associated those with HTC and some of the other brands out there. Okay. Now with Windows Phone, people actually recognize that Microsoft's got a compelling offer, okay, alongside Apple and Google in the market. So that's really important. Okay. Now, of those people who have actually started using the device, we've actually got really good feedback to say that people are actually really overjoyed and satisfied with the platform as a whole. Okay. People pick it up, they get started with it really easily, and the overall feedback on the device is that it's a really good device. And in fact, Brendan Watson from the phone team actually posted had a challenge for Scott Adams, who is the creator of Dilbert. Okay, and he actually gave Scott a device and actually got him to use it for a period. Now, Scott actually came back and said, okay, yeah, it's a really credible device. It's really good, really easy to jump in and get used to. In fact, Brendan actually, the challenge was that if Scott didn't like it and said that the other platforms were better, he'd actually donate $1,000 to a charity of his cause. Now, we actually won that challenge, okay, but there was a caveat. Okay, Adams came back and basically said that whilst it is a good platform, it lacks the coolness factor. Okay, he also said that the start screen is a really compelling offer for, and a really usable thing for people to get in and actually get the job done, which is actually part of the marketing spiel for the Windows Phone platform. It's get in and get out. Okay, so it's glance at your phone, get the job done, and actually put it back in your pocket. So you're not continually, you know, it's not the crappy app. It's not doing this all the time. It's basically put it away and actually get on with life. Okay. Okay, the other area that Microsoft's done a really good job of with the Phone 7 platform is integrating with other partners. So if you look at the mobile ecosystem, on one hand you've got Apple, which is basically owns the whole ecosystem around the iPhone and the iPad. Okay. On the other end of the spectrum, you had Windows Mobile and Android. Okay. Now, they've kind of fallen into the same category. Pretty much any OEM can actually go and produce a device and actually certify it and say, okay, yep, we're using that platform. Okay, Windows Phone aims to sit right in the middle of that. Okay, whilst there are a lot of hardware requirements about what entails a Windows Phone, okay, there are a number of OEMs that are actually able to go and produce those. Okay, and obviously the announcements around the partnership with Nokia brings a very, very credible mobile player to the market with the Windows Phone platform. Okay, just to look at some of those demographics. It's interesting to note that if you look at the share in North America, Nokia is only a very small percentage of the market. And interestingly, if you look at the worldwide stats, Nokia is a huge player in the market. Okay, so this deal with between Nokia and Microsoft to actually bring Phone 7 to the Nokia hardware is massive. Okay, and you know the media recognize that. Consumers will start to associate Windows Phone and Nokia, okay? And what we should see is a big, massive uptake in Phone 7 devices over the coming years. Okay, there's an elephant in the room. How many people, actually out of interest, how many people have actually started playing with the tools? Okay, very low. Are we all iPhone or Android developers in here? Okay, cool. What did the rest of you guys do? Are you just quiet? It's Wednesday morning. I'm just sitting here. Okay, cool. Okay, for those who haven't been tracking the space, okay, there's a little bit of confusion. I just want to hit this nail on the head because you'll see these numbers come up a couple of times through the next couple of days if you sit in the phone sessions, okay? It used to be Windows Phone 7 series, okay, back when they first announced it at Mobile World Congress a year or so ago, okay? Since then, the marketing guys realized that there was a bit of a mistake to have such a long name, so they dropped the series and it became Windows Phone 7. Okay, now, I think in hindsight, they probably realized that even having the 7 there is probably a bit of a marketing faux pas because, you know, it's not version 7 of a platform. It's actually version 1 of a platform because, you know, they've completely rechanged the product. And, you know, the Phone 7 is really trying to align it with Windows 7. Okay, now, the reality is that they can't go to Windows Phone 8, because Windows 8's not ready, right? So now they're in this kind of middle zone about, okay, well, what do we name Mango, okay, which is the update that's imminent, okay? So the core platform, as consumers will see it, is actually Windows Phone 7.5, which is based on Windows Phone operating system version 7.1, okay? So if you look at the dev tools, they'll all be targeting 7.1, okay? Because that's the operating system version. It's very similar to Windows. Windows 7 runs on Windows OS 6, okay? Or 6 Plus, I forget what the number is, okay? Now, Windows Phone 7, okay, 7.1 Windows Phone 7.5 will run on Windows 7. You can see it's a bit of a mouthful here and try and get... the ordering right of these. So basically, operating system version is 7.1, and that will be across all the tools. The consumer side of things is Windows Phone 7.5. Okay. I'm glad I had to explain that one. Okay. One of the biggest criticisms about the Phone 7 platform is the lack of multitasking. And it's an interesting topic because actually Windows Phone 7 has had multitasking. Okay? It's had the ability to have multiple applications start up in a row and for you to go back to previously running applications. Okay? What people criticize or what they talk about in terms of the lack of multitasking is the ability to switch from one application that you're halfway through doing something into another application that you're halfway through doing something. When Windows Phone 7 launched, we had this concept of a back stack. So you basically go from application 1 to application 2. When you hit the back button, which is part of the hardware requirement, so every Windows Phone 7 has to have a hardware button, which does a back operation. You go back to the previous application in exactly the same state as you left it at. Okay, that's pretty much multitasking. Okay, if you look at the Android space, now actually applications can continue to run in the background. Okay, if you look at the Apple space, applications have very similar behavior to Windows Phone 7. When you go from one application to another, that application actually ceases, except for a couple of different scenarios. Okay, and these are very similar to what Mango brings to the table in terms of background agents and the ability to do some operations in the background. Okay, so the big things with Mango are we've got this thing called fast application resume or fast application switching, you might hear it as. Okay, and that's actually the ability for you to press and hold on the back button and now go back to any of your applications that are in the back stack without having to navigate literally back through them all. Okay, so with the RTM version, you had application 1, 2, 3, and 4. You press the back button, you go back from 4, 3, 2, and 1. Okay, now you can press and hold and skip from application 1 straight to application 1. Okay. The other thing about fast application resume is that those applications in the past might have actually been suspended and terminated in the background. Okay. Now, when you hit the back button, those applications get restarted and repositioned back into the state that you left them. Okay. So that actually induced quite a long latency between when you press the back button to go back through those applications. With fast application resume, those applications stay in memory as long as possible. Okay. It's not a guaranteed behavior that those applications will stay in memory because some applications use more memory than others and they need more performance, you know, more CPU resources than others. Okay. So if that happens and the device realizes that it's running short on memory, it'll actually pitch some of those applications out of memory. They're still in the back stack. You can still go back to them. Okay. There'll just be a little bit longer latency. Okay. Okay. The other thing we've got is this idea of live agents or background agents. Okay, so this is the ability for some of your code to run in the background. Now, this is not the same as having your application running in the background. It's actually you're allocating a chunk of work to be done in the background. Okay, so there's a couple of different options there. There's ones which are related to audio. So this is the concept of having audio running in the background, and you'd be able to skip through tracks and actually use the media player interface to jump through those. There are background agents that run on a time basis, so every half an hour your code will get an opportunity to execute. Okay. Or there are background agents that run on idle. So these are basically tasks that will be spun up when your device is no longer being used. Okay. So if you're on a Wi-Fi network or you're powered, for example, overnight when you plug your phone into charge, that's the time when we can actually do a whole bunch of stuff in the background, okay, because the user's not using the device. Okay. There's a whole bunch of improvements around notifications, okay, both in terms of push notifications, so tile and toast notifications, but also in terms of integration into the alarms and the reminder system actually on the phone. So your application can actually raise alarms and reminders in the same way as the core platform can. So this is very consistent behavior. And lastly, we've got background transfer services. So, for example, if your application needs to download a large audio chunk or a large video chunk, you can actually trigger that to run in the background. Okay. So, when the device is not being used or when there's a network available that can pull these down at minimal cost, it will go ahead and do those in the background. Now, you can actually do uploads with that in the same way. Okay. So, you can trigger a large chunk of, it might be a photo or it might be some video, to upload to the cloud. You can actually set that to run as a background task. The integration with the phone as a device. Now, with the RTM version, this was limited to only a few different areas. So, for example, we could use a launcher to actually go and capture a camera image. Okay, but we were very limited in what we could do with that. With Mango, the whole world's open to us. Okay, there's a whole bunch of new features there. Okay, so we've got integration into the camera. Okay, so we can actually get direct video feed into our app. Okay, so this opens up a whole bunch of augmented reality scenarios that we can now do. Okay, we've got much better integration with the sensors on the device. With the first version, we could actually only integrate with the accelerometer. Now we've got the digital compass, we've got potentially a gyro, depending on which devices support it. And over the top of that, Microsoft has actually got a really nice API for integrating with that, which they call the spatial framework or the motion class. Okay. We've got low-level access to sockets. Okay, so we can now do direct, low-level, send and receive packets, which is particularly good if you're having to stream a whole bunch of stuff on or off the device. Okay. We've got really good data level support, so we've got SQL Compact Edition actually on the device, okay, so we can do read and writes to a relational database in a much, much more performant way than we could do in the past. In the past, we really had to serialize things down to either XML or JSON and then save them to disk, which was very high latency. Okay, we've got a number of new launches and choosers to, again, integrate with the phone. Launches and choosers are one of those areas where Microsoft had to make a call as to providing a way for applications to get access to device data versus protecting the user and making sure that they've got control over what you do. For example, there's no way for your application to bulk send an SMS without the user acknowledging it. Okay, so you have to use the SMS send task. Okay, and basically you can pre-format who it's going to be sent to and the contents of the message, but at the end of the day, the user has got control over whether it's been sent or not. Okay, and that's one of the important things about the platform is that the user is always in control as to what goes on. So, for example, in the previous slide, we talked about background agents. Okay, one of the things that will be available in Mango is the ability for the users to go and disable those, because there'll be a whole bunch of apps that are out there that will want to use background agents for various things, but they may do so at the expense of the user. So, for example, if the user says, okay, well, actually, my battery life on my phone is super critical to me. I don't want any background agents to run. Okay, so I don't want the device to continually spin up and do these background agents. I can go into settings and actually disable those background agents. So, again, the user is in control. Okay. The other thing that I'd really like to point out here is that there's a set of basic controls that come with the platform, and we'll talk about the panorama and the pivot in a minute. But there is a really great project on CodePlex called the Silverlight Toolkit for Windows Phone, okay, which has a whole host of new features and controls that are available for the platform. So if you're doing Windows Phone stuff, don't just stick with the core SDK. Actually, go to the CodePlex and actually grab that source code down as well. The phone framework itself, okay, one of the signature features of the Windows Phone platform is the start screen. Okay, so I'll show you an example of that in a minute. This is basically the launch area for your applications, but it's also an area where you as an application developer can update the user about what's going on with their application. So there's this concept of live tiles. Okay, and this is really the signature experience for Windows Phone. It's about looking at your live tiles, seeing what's coming up in your life or seeing what's currently going on in your life, and putting your phone away without necessarily having to open any applications. So, for example, if I need to know what my next appointment is, I can actually open the device, look at my start screen, it'll tell me what my next appointment is, put the phone away. I don't even need to open, my calendar or my Outlook or anything like that. Okay. With Mango, this area's got a whole raft of new features in it. Okay. So the live tiles used to be just a static image. Okay. Now we've got the front. We've actually got the back of the tile. So the tiles will, if you actually make use of the back of the tile, the core platform will actually flip the tile over periodically so that you've actually got more space to write things and more space to present information to the user. So, for example, Twitter might decide to actually make use of this feature and actually, in addition to just showing, the latest, front screen tile, which is basically you've got 15 unread tweets, okay? The back of the tile could actually be updated to actually show you the latest set of tweets, okay? So that can periodically be updated using push notifications, okay? Notification platform is improved, okay, significantly, okay? We've now got the ability to do not just toast and tile updates, but when you receive a toast, the user can actually click on that and it will not only launch the application, it can actually take you to a specific point in the application. So we've got this concept of deep linking. Okay, and we'll talk about that in the context of phone extras. Okay, with the version 1 of the platform, there was a number of things that we could do in terms of integrating with the music and video hub and integrating into the photos area of the device. Now we've actually got the ability to integrate into the Bing search. Okay, and when I go through the example later on, I'll actually show you how we can actually do that. One of the reasons I love developing for Windows Phone is I reckon that the tool set rocks. Now, I've done Android development, I've done iPhone development, and the tool set that Microsoft delivers with Visual Studio and Expression Blend are hands down the best in best of breed. Okay, they provide not only the best debugging experience, but with Mango, we've now got the ability to do performance analysis. We've got the ability to take content off the emulator and actually analyze what's going on with isolated storage, which is our persistent storage layer. Okay, we've got in the .NET space, we've got generational GC, which means that behind the scenes, the garbage collection for within .NET is actually going behind. And instead of doing a one pass, it actually does a multi-level collection of the garbage, which means that we don't have to actually worry about that. In version one of the platform, if you were using, for example, the panorama and the pivot, and you used those on a number of pages, you actually started to have to think about what you were doing in terms of memory allocation, and you actually had to run the garbage collector. The whole purpose of the garbage collector is it should be collecting stuff in the background for you. So when you no longer need an object, it should automatically be pitched and actually get cleaned up behind the scenes. Now, with Mango, that'll happen more frequently and actually happen in the background. We've got some really good improvements around XNA. Okay, so we've actually got hardware level processing for vectors and math operations. Okay, which means that we've got a significantly better platform and a quicker platform to build games on. Okay, in the emulator has been extended so that we've actually got good emulation for both the sensors. So we've got accelerometer. We've actually got the ability to rotate the device, the emulator in sort of 3D space. We've also got the ability to take screenshots. And we've also got the ability to simulate location within the emulator. So we've got some really good improvements there. Okay. And lastly, Microsoft done a lot of work around the ingestion process. So this is the ingestion into Marketplace. There's been a lot of critical feedback coming back from developers saying the process is too opaque. It's too difficult to work out whether we're going to pass or fail. So we've actually got built into Visual Studio a tool which will actually run a set of automated tests. It also highlights a number of manual tests that you can run on your application to make sure that it is going to pass Marketplace. Okay. Talking of Marketplace, okay, if you didn't see the news last night, Marketplace is now open for Mango applications. So if you've been building stuff and you want to try out some of the new features and you start to want to run through that certification process in preparation for launch, you can now do that. Okay, there's been a lot of work that they've put into the Marketplace to actually improve it. So the actual application hub, which you can see here on the right, they've completely redesigned it. To try and make sure that this process is much easier to submit your applications, it's easier to get reports out as to how your application's doing. And that includes crash reports, okay? So the new App Hub design actually will give you information about how your applications are performing in real time, okay? If you're getting a lot of crashes, you can actually go through and have a look at them. It will give you the stack trace so you can go and analyze where they're falling over, where your application's falling over and failing. That said, if your application's failing too frequently, you won't pass market certification because in order to get your application certified, it actually has to be stable. Okay, it has to be, so ideally, your crash report should be fairly minimal. But things aren't perfect. We all know that. We're all developers. So sometimes it's good to have the ability to diagnose those. Marketplace actually on the device and in the Zune interface has actually been significantly improved as well to highlight applications and to try and make it easier for users to find what they're after. The other area where Microsoft's done a lot of investment is around the concept of beta distribution and test distributions for applications. Okay, so there's two different things here. The first one is beta or test distributions. Okay, so this is the ability for you as a developer to basically say, okay, my application I think is done. Okay, but I really want to try it on a number of devices. I want to get a lot of people to try and test this application, but I don't want to go out to the broader world. I don't want to release it publicly and have all this negative feedback coming back to me. Okay, so with the beta distribution service, I can list a number of testers, so I need to provide their live ID that they've signed into their device. And as part of going through the app submission process, I can say, okay, my Zap, which is the distributable unit for Windows Phone apps, is ready to go to testers. Okay, here's the list of live IDs that I want to be distributed to. And what you'll receive from Marketplace is an email that you can then circulate to those people, which provides them with a link to the application. Okay, now It is limited to those live IDs, okay, so there is actually checks when the user clicks on that link to verify that they've actually signed into their device with one of the listed live IDs, okay, so it is checked, okay, so there's some checks and balances there, so it's not a distribution mechanism, okay. The applications will only run for 90 days, okay, so that's your period, the test period to get feedback from those users, okay. And there's no update process. So at the end of that time, or when the users end finish testing, they have to uninstall it off the device in order to get the release version or get another test version from you. Okay, so these are just some things to be aware of. The big upsell from this is the fact that those devices don't need to be unlocked. Okay, so they don't need to be tested on a device that's been unlocked for development. Okay, so I can get any of my mates to give me one of their Windows Phone devices. I can actually get their live ID, send them the application, and actually run on their device. Okay, so it's a really good test to make sure that it's going to work on an end user's device. The other type of distribution is this targeted distribution service. Okay, so the other big feedback we got from a lot of people, a lot of enterprises, is that they want to build an app for their organization, but they don't want it to be available on the public marketplace. Okay, so this is really, there's a whole bunch of reasons why you want to do this. One of the main ones is enterprise deployment of apps. Okay, even though enterprises will probably ask for a username and password and validate against that their Active Directory or their own credential store before people can use the app, a lot of enterprises don't want their applications to be listed on the public marketplace. Okay, so this distribution mechanism basically allows for that. It's the process of certifying your applications for this distribution service is exactly the same as the public marketplace. So it needs to go through the certification process. But at the end of it, you get the option as to whether you publish it publicly in the marketplace or whether it's a private or hidden distribution. Now, even though it's hidden, there's no validation about, or there's no access control on the application. Okay, so if you'll get the email saying this is your deep link to the application, this is your link into the marketplace. If you just broadcast that on the World Wide Web, then anybody can go and download it, right? Okay, so the idea is that you'll get that email, you circulate it around within your organization. The organization can download the application and use it internally. Okay, that's the concept. Okay, enough talking. Let's actually build an app. You're all very quiet this morning. Please feel free to interrupt me if you've got questions, okay? Because that's the end of the main session on in terms of where we're at in terms of the marketplace, in terms of the developer landscape and things like that. I'm going to go through a couple of things in terms of building this application and showing you some roadmaps along the way. But do feel free to interrupt if you've got questions, okay? So let's crank over Visual Studio. Just remind me, how many people here are developers? Okay, good. So right audience. Excellent. Otherwise, the rest of this is going to be really boring for people who are not developers. Okay, let's go. File, new project. Okay. You'll see here that there's a number of different project templates that you've got for Windows Phone. Okay. This is to try and facilitate you going and building your application, getting started really quickly. Okay. One note here is that these are all geared and they're all coded in the way that Microsoft wants to code its examples. Okay, doesn't mean that you should necessarily have to do things exactly the same way. And in fact, my recommendation to people is for them to go file a new project and try out each of these examples and actually get a feel for how they run. Okay, what I would then do is scrap those, put them in the prototype bin, and then come back here and just use the Windows Phone application. Okay, that's your starting point for you actually creating your application. Okay. The reason being is that that's pretty much your empty application. Okay, it gives you a main page, but it gives you the ability to run up an application, but it's pretty much empty application. Okay, it gives you the ability to structure your application the way you want to do it, rather than being necessarily guided by, for example, the data-bound application uses one particular SKU of how you can do MVVM, for example. It's not necessarily the best way. It's just our way of doing it, okay? So don't necessarily feel that just because you want to do MVVM, you have to use the data-bound application as a template, okay? The other thing here is you'll notice at the top of this list there's a social viewer template. Now, this is actually available on Codeplex, so socialviewer.codeplex.com, and I'm actually going to use this template just to get us started here. The reason being is that this is a good template for getting started with RSS or, you know, feed aggregation type applications. Okay, so it's a newsreader style application, and it's good because I mean I can get up and running and I can show you a few things without having to, you know, go through the whole process of building out an application. Okay, so we'll do TechEd NZ demo. And again, this is structured in one way. I happen to know because I wrote most of it. And it does use MVVM. And you'll notice here that there's a list of pages. And you know, I've got a folder which has got all my pages in. Again, people structure their applications completely differently. Okay, some use other different frameworks. In this case, I've got a main page, and I've also got a corresponding view model for each of my pages. Okay, so that's the way I structure things. Okay, let me actually run this up in the emulator, and you'll actually see it in operation. Now, you'll notice that there's two windows that appear. Most scenarios, when you press F5 to actually run for Windows Phone Toolkit, you'll actually only see this front window. The back window is actually the console window that you need to use a registry key to enable, and this can actually be quite useful for debugging some of your applications. Okay, there's some stuff that appears in there that you won't necessarily see in the output window. For example, if you're using console.writeline, it will appear in that window as opposed to the output window. Okay. Let's have a look at the application. So it's a very simple application. It basically uses the Panorama experience. So this is the hub experience that you'll see throughout the core platform. So the actual core platform has a number of different hubs to do with your people or contacts, pictures and videos. Marketplace has got a hub. Games has got a hub. And of course, Office has got a hub. Okay, so all of the core areas of the platform have all got a dedicated hub. And you'll see this across a lot of applications that have been written for Windows Phone. They all make use of this hub concept, or a lot of them make use of this hub concept. So it's one thing that's really specific to Windows Phone. The other thing that you'll notice with some applications is that they make use of this pivot experience. Okay, so on the core platform, the hub experience is used for the people hub. So this gives you access to all of your recent contacts and the full list of contacts. If you actually drill into one of those contacts, you actually see this concept of a pivot. Okay, and it's a way of taking a whole bunch of data about, in this case, a particular contact, and actually breaking it up over a number of tabs or pivot items. Here we've done something slightly different. So the Windows Phone News, we've actually taken the concept of the Windows Phone News as a whole and broken it down by the people who talk about things. So Brandon, if we flip over, we've got Sean. And you'll notice we're doing some creative stuff here around dynamically loading the content. So we haven't got like 17 pivots all loading data at the same time. What we actually do is we wait for the user to navigate to those and actually reload things as we go. You'll also notice that as we scroll to the bottom here, it'll actually start to progressively download content. We'll go back to the main screen and I'll show you that. So this What's New feed, as we start to scroll down to the end of it, this is my trackpad on here playing up. What you'll see in the background is that it'll actually start to go and progressively download things in the past. So there's a lot of nice stuff that's actually built into this particular template that you get free out of the box. And it's actually all driven from a single configuration file in terms of the feeds that you want to access. So you can see here, we've got good integration into various social services like Twitter and Facebook. So if I jump back to the app, you go into the settings. You can see that I can actually go and associate with Twitter. So this means that from the same application, you actually go and authenticate to Twitter and approve the user to access Twitter from within the app, which then means that they can post updates and tweet and retweet content from within the app. Okay, so you get all of that stuff with the template. Okay, so even if you're not going to actually build a news reading application, it's just a really good template for going and saying, okay, well, actually, my application is going to want to make use of Twitter or it's going to make use of Windows Live. I want to go and grab that information and actually reuse it within my application. It's all freely available on Codeplex, so rather than having to write those lines of code yourself, go and grab the template. Okay, let's just jump back here. Okay, so that gives you an idea of building an app. Okay, what I want to briefly touch on before we move on is this concept of navigation within an app. Now, every mobile platform has their own concept of navigation. Windows Phone, basically, when it came out, had a very strong concept of navigation forward. Okay, so you click on a piece of content or you click on a menu item and you go forward to the next page. You go forward to the next page after that and again and again and again. What was important about the phone platform is this: is rather than every single one of those pages wanting to have a little back button actually as part of the page, okay, let's get rid of that and actually put it as part of the hardware. Okay, so every phone has a concept of a back button. Okay, now the important thing about the back button is it can only be used to go back to previous user experiences. Now the marketplace certification requirement has a more detailed explanation of exactly what the back button has to do. But I always think of it in terms of how would you take the user back to their previous user experience? Now, in most cases, that's back to the previous page. Okay, so you go page one, page two, page three, back button goes back to page two and back to page one. Simple. Okay, but what happens if we've displayed a dialogue in the page? Okay, so we pop up a dialogue saying, do you want to save changes, yes or no? What does the back button do? Okay, in that case, it's a dismiss. Okay, so it dismisses the dialogue, okay, as if they'd say cancel. Okay. And there's a number of scenarios like that where that's a legitimate use of the back button. Now, there are some cases where you should not use the back button. So, for example, if the user is typing into a form field, okay, so they're typing their name, blah, 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 hit the back button, you should not use the back button to delete content out of the text box. Okay, that's a bad use of the back button. In fact, you'll get failed for marketplace certification if you do that. Okay, so it's because it's not taking the user back to a previous user experience. Okay, it's just deleting content out of there. Okay, so there's some good and bad uses of the back. Okay, it's important that you get those right because marketplace will actually fail you for doing this. One of the few requirements about marketplace that actually governs how your application runs. Okay. The other important thing to understand about the platform is this concept of application lifecycle. Now, I touched a little bit about this before in terms of the fast application switching. This is talking about the fact that we don't really have this concept of multitasking in the same way as Android does, in the sense that you can have both applications in the background, both doing operations in the background. Okay, we only have one foreground application. It's the same as iOS. iOS only has one foreground application at a time. Okay, and this is basically to make sure that the user experience is always really responded. Okay, that means that when the user clicks on a button, it always does something. Okay, they always get feedback straight away that things are happening. And the way that we make sure that happens is we only have one application in the foreground. The challenge there is when the user goes off to another application, what do you do with the current applications in the foreground? Okay, and that's where we go essentially from an application that's not running initially, when they get launched to go to running, when the user puts it into the background or where they go to another application, it gets moved to this, I used to call it eligible for termination state. Microsoft's now calling it the dormant state. It's basically to say the application is still memory resident, but it's in the background. It's no longer actually executing code. Okay. In your application, you get an event which says your application is being deactivated. Okay. That's your opportunity to save any transient state for the application. So, for example, if the user is halfway through filling in a form, that's your opportunity to save the form information to the state dictionaries that are available for the platform. Okay. When the user comes back to your application, now they can now do this in two ways. They can either press the back button or they can press and hold the back button and jump straight to your application. Your application will actually receive an activated event as it comes back into the foreground. That's your opportunity to basically take that page state and make sure that those form fields are presenting the right information. Okay. Why do we need to do that if my application is still in memory? Okay. The reality is if your application is still in memory, like it hasn't been saved to disk or disposed of, you don't need to do anything. Okay. So that's this concept of coming back from dormant state into being the running application. If you are still in memory, you don't need to do anything. Okay. However, if you've been serialized to disk, okay, so your when the user comes back to your application, it gets restarted and relaunched back into the page. At that point, everything on your page will be blank. There won't be anything in those form fields. Okay, it's your responsibility as a developer to make sure that any of that transient state, so the data that was entered in those form fields, is put back into those form fields. So the user feels as if they come back to the application as they left it. Okay. Okay, let's jump back to our application, and what we're actually going to do is actually jump across to the designer experience. Okay, I mentioned before that there's two tools for doing Phone 7 development. There's Visual Studio, which is really your code editing tool. In fact, when I see developers who are using Visual Studio for doing design stuff, I say, you're not a designer, don't touch that stuff. Now, the reality is that as developers, we actually do need to do a lot of design stuff, but don't do it in Visual Studio. It's got one of the worst designers for XAML ever written, okay? Use Expression Blend. Now, I know for developers, Expression Blend is a bit of an eye-opener. It's a bit like, whoa, okay? The reason being is that it has been designed for designers, okay? And it's been designed to facilitate creation of UIs as distinct from writing code, okay? So it may take you a little bit of time to get used to, but it's definitely worth the jump, okay? So let's have a look at here, okay? And one of the things you'll notice again about this template is that we do have that design time support. Now, a lot of applications I see written, when we flip across into Expression Blend, all I get is a blank page, or you get nothing on the screen, and it comes up with this big error box saying, sorry, no design time support because code's broken here, okay? And that happens with a lot of applications. If you're working concurrently with a designer, in fact, even if you're not working concurrently with a designer, I'd highly recommend trying to maintain your design time experience, because it means that you can change layouts by pixel at a time in the design time and actually see it in design time, rather than having to press F5 and actually step through your application to see it. Okay, so this is a fully working application. You can see we've actually got design time experience for laying things out. So I'm going to come up here and actually find another panorama item. Okay, and drag that onto the bottom here. So this is my panorama. You'll see it's currently made up of three different panorama items. Okay, and the bottom one is the new one that I've just added. Okay, so I'll jump down here. Give that heading. Okay, now this is what I'm going to tie into is so we've got an application sitting there that's come from the template. Now the template is all geared around Windows Phone. Okay, so it grabs the latest Windows Phone news. It grabs the some images off Flickr that have been tagged with Windows Phone. Okay, now I've got a little application that actually didn't make it through Marketplace in time that was designed to capture images from around TechEd. Okay, so TechEd New Zealand and Australia will use this application to capture images. Okay, so it's published up there as an OData feed, and there's a Windows Phone application. But what I'm going to do in this application is just try and consume that feed and actually show you how easy we can actually do that. Okay, so all we're going to do in this panorama item is actually show you those list of captured items. Okay, so I'll come across here, go to my data, and I'm actually going to create some design time data just so I get a feel for how this is going to look in the designer. So sample data source, that sounds pretty good to me. I'm going to rename this collection to captures. Okay, so this is going to be my collection of items that I want to display. And down here, property 1 and property 2 don't make much sense to me, so I'm going to call this the capture blob URL. Okay, so that's the image that I'm going to be downloading, because I want to say that's actually the image. And this one's going to be called the comment field. Okay, and again, I'll change the type on that to being string. Okay, and so this is my sample data set. Okay, so it's available at design time, and I can drag this on here, and you notice that it's already gone and created some sample data for me. Now, I can go and customize that. I won't do it for the moment, but you can go and change the amount of sample data and the content for that. So, for example, if you don't like the list of armchair or chair images that it uses, you can actually say, okay, well, pull images from this particular folder, and it will actually use your images for that. The other thing, as I drag this sample data set across here, is you'll notice that it created not only a list box, but it also said, okay, well, you've got two properties in there. This is how I think you should probably lay this out. Now, actually, it did an okay job here, but I'm going to actually go and improve it. So I'm actually going to edit the item template for this particular list box. So this is editing the template for every single item in that box. Okay, and you'll notice here that on the left-hand side that we've got essentially a vertical stack panel with two items in it. We've got an image and text box. Makes sense, because that's what's being displayed for us. Okay, I don't like the fact that it's vertical, so I'm going to change that to horizontal. Okay, so you'll notice in the designer, it's changing it as we go. Okay, it's a really important thing for graphical designers. Okay, otherwise they've got no idea what they're building. I'm just going to change a few things, like just align the text and give it a bit of spacing so it stands out like that. And I'm actually going to add a little bit of spacing between each of these items as well, just to lay things out. Great, our design work is done. Now, I can actually flip back across to Visual Studio. It's going to prompt me to reload things because the tools actually don't realize that each other is modifying the same files as much as we'd like to. Let me just run this up. And what we should see is that we've now... Okay. Let me just dump back and actually double-check that I saved everything in Expression Blend. Try that again. And what we should see is we should have an additional panorama item with all our armchairs in it. Okay, that's not what we want to be displaying. We want to display pictures from TechEd, right? Okay, so we need to do two things. First of all, we need to actually disable the design time data. Okay, so it only is there at design time. And if we flip across to Expression Blend, you'll see that this is actually an option just in the designer. So we can disable the design time data at runtime. Okay, we'll save that. And the other thing we need to do, of course, is actually to wire up some data. Okay, so it'll come across here, allow it to reload. I'll actually close this file. And I'll go here and add service reference. Now, one of the nice things in Mango is that we've got good support for consuming OData now. Okay, so I can go down to here. I've got a capture service here. This isn't a normal WCF service. It's an OData service, so it's a WCF data service. But you'll notice that it pulled that in quite nicely, and I'll call that TechEdData. Okay, so all in the designer. And we're going to have to write a little bit of code to wire this up. So I'll come down to my page. I'll actually jump to my view model, okay, because I'm going to be exposing this as a property. Okay, and we'll start by creating a captures property. And we'll just allow it to update the references. Okay, so you notice here that we've got basically a property that exposes effectively a collection of capture objects. Okay, and this capture object actually was brought in when I went add service reference. Okay, so it created an object in the background. It's a proxy object that it's going to use to consume things across the wire called capture. Okay. The property itself doesn't actually load anything, so of course we've got to write some code to do that. And rather than bore you with my slow typing, I'll dump some code in there. Now, the important thing here is that we're writing a link query. Can we all see that? Is that big enough for everyone at the back? Okay. We're writing a link query to actually go and consume that data. Okay. So we're basically saying, for every captures in the captures collection, okay, we're going to validate that the country is for New Zealand, okay, because we want for TechEd here. And we want it for the Windows Phone track only, because I don't want to see what, you know, Shane's doing in the designer track or anything like that. Okay, so bring back just the Windows Phone one. We create a collection for that, and then we load the query into that collection. Okay, now we actually get feedback here when that's actually happened in the background, and at that point is when I'm actually going to update my captures object. Okay, now if the demo gods are with me, when we run this, we should actually see a list of images. Okay, so it's hit my breakpoint, which is good. And if I flip across here, you can actually see that we've actually got the images coming from that feed. Okay, pretty much they look exactly the same as they did in the designer, right? Okay, so that's that whole integrated dev to designer experience actually working. Okay. Okay, so before I jump on, so you've seen there within that application we use the panorama to actually have that sort of hub experience. Okay. And just a recap, that the hub experience is really used for pulling multiple data sources into a single aggregated experience. Okay, and that's primarily how it's used across the platform. The best apps use it that way. I've seen it hacked apart and used for a whole bunch of other things, but the best apps that you see around do that. In fact, there's a Windows Phone app for TechEd New Zealand that actually uses the Panorama experience and initially, you'd think, oh, well, that's not the Panorama experience, because they've done a really good job of actually customizing the layout of it so that it looks really nice. But underneath, it's actually using the Panorama experience. The pivot experience, single data set displayed in multiple different ways, depending on which pivot you're on. Okay. There's also built-in support for mapping, so we've got a Bing Maps control, which is a great control for laying data and using spatial data. And then, as I mentioned, there's a toolkit, and there's a whole bunch of controls that are available for that. And these controls are good because they actually mirror exactly the way the core platform works. So, for example, the long list selector is a really good list for if you've got a huge amount of data and you want to partition it into groups. Okay, the core platform does that with, for example, your contacts. It'll break them down by alphabetical letter. So you can jump from A to Z just by opening effectively a jump list, and it will jump to that partitioned part in the list. The long list selector does that so that you can do that, have that same behavior within your application. Okay. And the rest of the controls are all there to try and facilitate a common user experience across the platform. Okay, so I want to make my application faster. One of the things I mentioned before was the fact that we've now got built-in performance tools within within Visual Studio. So I can come down here to, let me find it, start Windows Phone performance analysis. Okay, and you'll see that we've now got the ability to do both runtime and performance analysis as well as memory analysis. Okay, so we can actually see over time how our application is using memory. That's important because there's a marketplace requirement that you always sit under 90 megabytes in memory. Okay, quite often in the past it was very easy to go over that if you used the Panorama and the Pivot experience too much. With these tools, it's very easy to actually get a grab of that information and actually see how your application tracks over time. You can see where you're introducing memory leaks. So, for example, if you're not releasing objects and you're continually creating them, you're wiring up event handlers and not letting them go. It's really easy to start profiling that information out with the memory analysis and the execution analysis as well. Now, I'm not actually going to run this. There's a session on, it's a Thursday morning. morning, where Jeff will actually go through the full details of this. However, there is one performance glitch that I know in the app that, in fact, we just introduced. Okay, if I find where we just had our comment area, so we this is the area where we just added our images. Okay, let me just get rid of this. And so this is the data template. This is the template for each of our items that we've created in our list. Now, one of the issues with this is that we're going off to and pulling back this list of captured images. Okay, what we're getting back is the URL for each of those images. Okay, and we're wiring that up to the source property of this image control. Okay, what that image control is then going to do is it's going to go out to that URL, download the image, and display it. Okay. Now, the problem with that is it all happens on the UI thread. So what that will be doing is it will actually be starting to block the UI thread as it starts to decode those images. Okay. Now, one of the really nice things in Mango is that we've now got the ability to actually do that on the background on a background thread. So it'll basically start the operation to go and download it on the UI thread, but then it unblocks. Okay. So the UI thread is free to accept input from the user. Okay. Whilst in the background, it will go and download the image. It'll actually decode it in preparation for blitting it to the screen effectively. So to do that, what we'll do is, we'll come down here and grab some code so you don't have to watch me type. We'll grab that and dump that in there. Okay, so there's the ability to specify the create option, and we set that as to background creation. Okay, so that will be the ability to run that in the back, to load that data in the background. Okay, so that will give us that little bit of extra performance. Okay, this is particularly important if you're going to create a long list with a lot of image content in there. So, okay, so it takes that emphasis off the UI thread and frees it up for the user interaction. All right. Let's jump back to... So that's performance tuning. Okay, I mentioned before that we've got integration with Bing Search. Okay, this is one of the really neat areas of the phone. Now, originally with Windows Phone, the search button was a context-aware search. Okay, so for example, if you were in the People Hub and you hit the search button, it would actually do a search over those people. And the initial thought amongst developers is it would be really nice to have that functionality into our apps. Okay, so we can hit the search button and search within the context of our apps. Unfortunately, the end users don't see it that way. What they see is that they see a very disjointed experience between the search, where if, for example, I'm on the start screen, if I press the search, I go to Bing Search. Okay. Whereas if I'm in the People Hub, pressing the search does an in-context search. So, of course, you've got this inconsistency across the platform there. And the feedback was resounding the fact that this inconsistency was just confusing, so people never used the search. Okay, if they were in the People Hub, they clicked the search icon, which was in the hub, okay, as distinct from pressing the search button. Okay, so one of the changes that happens in Mango is that the search button always goes to Bing Search. Okay, so wherever you are on the device, if you press the search button, it will take you to Bing Search. However, okay, obviously taking to Bing Search is great, but what we really want to do is search across the device, or we want to be able to search within applications and things like that. Okay, the search extra features is one step along that path. Okay, it doesn't do a device level search, it doesn't do a search across applications. What it does is when you get a result set back from Bing, Bing can say, okay, well, I know that you did a search for Windows Phone, say HTC, which we'll do in a minute. Okay. Here's a list of the products that I found that Bing knows about to do with the possible results for your search criteria. Okay, from those products, you can click through the products and it can say, I see that you've clicked on this Windows Phone. Do you realize that this application can actually help you with that? Okay, so it's the ability for you to integrate your applications with the Bing search results. Okay, so let me jump back to our application, and we're going to do that with our phone application. So the first part of doing that is that I've got to register this application as a Bing Search extra. So in our manifest file, which basically determines a whole bunch of information about our application, so it determines at the top here you can see some capabilities that I've defined for this application that says, okay, this feature, this application is going to make use of these features on the phone. That's important for when the users download it from Marketplace. They can say, okay, well, this one needs location, or this one's using my identity. Okay. We've also got things like the startup page. Okay, so for example, the normal startup page for an application is just that. Okay, so because the main pages are just in the root folder. If you change the layout of your folder structure, or you create it as a different page, you can change the startup task here. The other thing you can do, obviously, is register for the Bing Search extras. Okay, so you can see here that we're going to register for the Bing search, okay, so hence the prefix Bing on each of these. We're going to register for products, and we're going to register for a subsection called computing. We're going to do it for electronics, and we're going to do tools and hardware, okay? So this is the registration for those. The other area where you need to add something is this extras file, okay? So this is basically saying, okay, look at the extras file for more information, okay? So we'll come down here, and we'll actually go to extensions, and we'll create a new XML file. Okay, and again, I will grab some code for you. Okay, and this is basically defining how the search results or the application will appear within the search results. So, for example, you'll see that the title of the application will be Social Viewer Sample. Okay, and where it's made a match against a computing product, we'll see the title of Windows Phone Computing. And similarly for electronics, you'll see like Windows Phone Electronics, Windows Phone Tools and Hardware. So these are basically the information that you're presenting within the search results for the application. The next thing we need to do is okay, so that's the registration process done. The other thing we need to do is when our application gets called, so when the user clicks on the application to launch our application, a particular page will get launched within our application. Now, clearly, Bing Search doesn't want to have to provide a different page for every single application. So what they do is they call a page called Search, I think it's Search Results. Okay, and what we need to do is map that page to a page within our application. And we do that with a URI mapper. Those of us who have done Silverlight development will recognize URI mappers for doing URL mapping for deep linking within our application for Silverlight application. Up until now, it's had no relevance with Windows Phone, really. But now with the concept of deep linking, whether it be from a tile or from a toast or from marketplace search, URI mapping has actually got quite a lot of relevance. Okay, so I'll add that bit of code in here. And so essentially what we're saying here is map any URL that starts with search extras to my main page. Okay, so just redirect into the main page. Now, I could specify that to go to any other page within our application. The thing to bear in mind here is that when your application will get launched from that URL, it'll actually go directly to that page. It will skip any other page within your application. So it's not like it'll start your application and then navigate to that page. It'll actually go directly to that page. Okay. So the thing to bear in mind there is that you might be three tiers deep within your application. So you may want to provide a mechanism to get from there back to the home or the hub area of your application, if that's the case. Okay. So in our case, we're just going to launch the main page. The last thing we need to do to actually complete that part of it is to come in here and actually say we want to make use of that URI mapper. Okay, you'll notice that where I defined it in the XAML file here, we're actually in the application resources. So that's the resources area is just a key value dictionary. Okay, it's basically our ability to, at runtime to create a bunch of objects or a bunch of resources that are defined by a key. So in this case, we've created a URI mapper with a key called URI mapper. Okay. In order for us to wire that into the application, we actually need to tell the application about it. Okay, so that's what we do here. We basically say on the root frame, we want to use this URI mapper and just load it from the resources. Okay, so hopefully at runtime, it will pick that up and actually start to use it. The last thing we're going to do is actually within our application, within our main page, we're actually going to process the results of those. So I will come down here and, again, grab a chunk of code. So all I'm going to do is pick up on the navigated event, so that's the event that gets raised when we navigate to that page, and I'm going to pull out the search results and have a look for this value of product name. Okay. Now, rather than actually run the application, so you'll notice here we actually pull the product name and we actually display it in a message box. Okay. I'm actually going to deploy this application. Okay. So rather than run it, okay. The reason being is because we actually want to launch the application from search. Okay, so that's deployed successfully. So I'll come over to the emulator, click on the search, and we'll get there. And I'll type in Windows Phone HTC, and we'll get back a search result. And I can click through to the actual product. Okay, so it's giving me a whole bunch of information about the product, reviews, prices. And it's list applications that are returned as search results for that. So here's the social viewer sample. And so that's the title that I defined, and it's picked it up in the electronics category. Okay, so I'll click through to that. This will launch the application and go directly to that main page. And with a bit of luck, it'll actually pick out that product name and actually display it as a message box. There we go. Okay, so you can then use that within your application to either present more information about that. It may be a purchase option to purchase that. Now, interesting thing there, it just pitched me out of the app. The reason being is that because I didn't handle that message box within a certain period, it actually timed out the application startup. Okay, so that was just a demo feature. It wasn't a crash. Okay. Sorry? Good question. I think he just come back and says you need to be online to search. It doesn't do a device-based search, no. I mean, so the concept there is that essentially you're registering for your application to be listed under a number of different product categories. So it makes the assumption that it's going to receive a whole bunch of results back, some of which may be products, okay? And where a product's listed, then your application will be listed alongside that, okay? It's not intelligent enough to realize that you only want to register for a certain particular product. It's up to your application to then handle that. Okay, the last thing I want to show is just the App Hub. Okay, so we'll just jump into here. Okay, so this is the brand new portal that they've come up with. Okay, so it gives you your information about your payouts. Now, obviously, this is my test account, so I don't have any payouts there, and I've got a series of sort of trial applications and things like that. I've got the ability to go through the new submission process. Okay, so this basically jumps me into creating a new submission when it finally gets there. Okay, and you'll see here that it's a guided process that goes through a number of different steps. Okay, that's the App Hub. On the flip side, within our Visual Studio, you've actually got this marketplace test kit. Okay, so you can see here that it basically provides you the warm up to going through to App Hub. So it says, okay, you need to define an application tile, you need to define a set of marketplace tiles, screenshots, and things like that. There's a bunch of automated tests. So if I actually run that now, you'll notice that it says, please use release mode. Okay, that's pretty intelligent. So we'll do that. We'll use release mode. Rebuild. Okay, so now when I run it, it will still fail because I haven't actually defined things like the icons and the screenshots. Okay, but you can see that it's actually gone through the process of validating the package format. So I don't need to go to App Hub, submit the application, and then get a notice 3 minutes later saying, oh, something's invalid in your application. Okay, where it's just come back straight away and said, okay, you're passing the packaging requirements. There are monitor tests, so these ones are tests to monitor your application when it's running. And lastly, there's some manual tests. Okay, so these ones give you a good heads up as to the types of tests that the marketplace team will be doing on your application before they approve it for publishing on the marketplace. Okay, so you can go through these, you can mark off which ones you think you've passed. Okay, so you can either pass it or fail them. Okay, and this gives you the ability to sort of circulate this within your team and get other people within your team to actually run through these tests for you, because it'll actually persist those. You can share them amongst your team until you're comfortable that your application is ready to go. So with that, we're pretty much there. Okay. Just like to highlight the fact that there are some Windows Phone communities locally to New Zealand. I'm not particularly in touch with the local market here. Nigel Parker and Mark Bishop are the two contacts that I'd recommend that you contact if you do need to get hold of people locally. There is an Auckland group and a Wellington group who meet on a fairly frequent basis, is my understanding. So. I'll be around here for the next 3 days. Feel free to come and ask me questions. And there's some resources. And I think we're out of time. So if you want to hang around afterwards, I'm more than happy to take some questions. Thanks, guys.